When this week, on the 19th of March 2016, the Dons' hope of a League Two playoff were kept alive by Jake Reeves' last gasp wonder goal that defeated York City and secured a first win in six games. The game looked to be heading for a draw, only for the midfielder to hit a perfect dipping volley in the third minute of added time. You need those moments, manager Neil Ardy said. Let's hope it is a moment we can look back on that changed the course of the season. It did indeed. Whatever happened to that nice chap, Jake Reeves? We're the same old Rumbles. We're back.
It might not be life or death, my friend, but to me, it's more important than that.
Hello, hello, gentlemen. Hello, dear listener. Welcome to the same old Rumbles. I'm Matt Cooper, and today I'm joined by mon frere, Niall Cooper. Hello, Niall.
Hello, Matthew.
And our ever vigilant producer, exhausted producer, put upon producer, Adam Proctor. Hello, Adam.
Hello. I kind of feel like now when we do these intros, you should actually say who's not here. But yeah,
and
hello,
you need to,
everyone.
I need to welcome people and our football guru, stats man, who we are going to give stat time.
We have
to
give stat time. We have to give stat.
We're going to give stat time to Mr. Mark Lewis. Hello, Mark.
Good evening, good evening. Oh, of course you've got to give me some stat time because League Two is so ridiculously unpredictable this season, and this week, in fact, that there's loads of opportunities for the World Wide Web to come up with some weird and particularly wonderful stats. You forgot to mention, by the way, that Jake Reeves' volley was from about 27, 28 yards, and nobody thought it was going to go in, and we played shit that day, and how we managed to pull a win out of the bag, I've got no idea.
It was the most amazing goal. But I can only read out what is in the wonderful AFC Wimbledon On This Day book by Gary Jordan and Stephen Crabtree with a wonderful foreword by Ian Cook. It's available. I mean, I just wonder how often they're going to have to update this. A, and B, my concern is when we get into next season and I start repeating myself because I haven't marked out what I've said and not said.
Oh, yeah, that's true. You should have made a little...
You better listen back, though, because we
really,
are coming up
really
to episode 100, so we need to put some particular milestone in at that point.
100. Imagine. How on earth did that happen? Anyhow, chaps, we've got two games to talk about, but do we really want to talk about Cheltenham? I guess the only thing I would say about Cheltenham is that, from my point of view, it was a crazy atmosphere because we had a lot of the PSV fans in there and they were just bouncing. In actual fact, it was second only to the Notts County game. I thought in terms of atmosphere, it was amazing. It was really, really cracking atmosphere. And I thought when Tilly equalised, we were going to go on and do this. But what do I know? We're just being punished all over the place.
Well,
no, you actually...
Actually, it was almost like the discussion we had about Brown or Maycock was played out on the pitch. Because we love how good Brown could be, but actually sometimes you've just got to put the ball in the goal.
Yeah. Brown likes to take on every player. Yeah. No.
On the Brown-Maycock thing, Mark, I just, for those of you who didn't listen to last week's podcast, for which I was espousing why Maycock is very important, and not the suicidal runs of Brown, which will be my quote. I do believe that Brown started and played the most of the game against Cheltenham, and Maycock started and played most of the game against Carlisle. And just from I've seemed to have forgotten my memory a bit here. What happened in the first 2 minutes at Carlisle? Does anybody recall anything? What any Mark? Mark,
oh, no, I think we should bring in Adam. Adam, what happened in the?
Well, I was even there Tuesday, so I can't. Who knows what happened in the first 2 minutes? Maybe Maycock scored. Whatever.
Yeah, that's at Carlisle. Was it at Carlisle? So Brown played, we lose. Maycock plays, scores.
Yeah, we didn't lose because Brown played, but actually, it's a mentality thing. We had the mentality to start and attack from the off as a team. If you look at I saw a still today of the penalty area when Brown scored, not Brown, excuse me, when Alistair Smith scored at Carlisle, the second goal, and there are six white shirts, six Wimbledon shirts in the penalty area. I don't think that ever happened once in the game against Cheltenham.
No. And here's a question that I've got. Looking at the two games and a few of the other games, is we, and I remember I was listening to someone that's saying that we didn't think we had strength in depth. I think we do. And I think that there are certain teams you put out for the teams you play. You adjust your team for the opponents. And so we did that, I think, against Carlisle. We didn't do it against Cheltenham. And we certainly didn't go against Bromley or Morecambe either. So if we'd have played a different system, different set of players against those teams, maybe we'd have gone. And I'm wondering again if against Barrow, he will play a similar-ish side, one that actually is able to break a team down. Because if you've got, and I don't know, I'm just thinking on top of my head, if you've got Nerville and Tilly bombing on, and they are having to take, they love to counter attack. But when a side is sitting back, we have to play differently. So, Mark, I'm wondering, are we playing? Is it going to be maybe not a different formation necessarily? Although, you know, we certainly have three in midfield, or is it going to be, you know, is he going to go back?
Well, we're jumping ahead already, but the reality is on Saturday, we'll have no Bugle because he's off on a particularly worthwhile international escapade against a team I can't even pronounce, let alone work out whether or not it's worthwhile playing. Obviously, everyone wants to be international, but he looks knackered, and putting him on a flight anywhere to go and play international football, unfortunately, I don't think is really going to be any good for us, but we can't do anything about that, unfortunately. So we have no Bugle. By the sound of it, both Tilly and Piggott have picked up injuries that are not going to clear up particularly quickly. So therefore, you've got Furlong, and you've got to work out who else is going to play in midfield or who else is going to be the link. Because if we play Josh Kelly, for example, who we know is the most willing of any of our runners and will, you know, work his socks off for however long he's on the pitch. But if we play him and then play the same kind of long balls towards him like we would do if Bugle was playing, that'll be totally pointless, frankly. But I don't know who else we've got. And I'm tempted to play Foyer there, if only because he's actually more of a unit. I think if you try and play Sasu in that central role, which was his role, he'll just get confused because he's getting used to being a wing-back again.
Don't you think, guys, that playing Brown, this is when you play Brown. Brown, I
what, as a target man?
As a replacement for Bugle. I would say Brown's a replacement for Bugle.
I can't see him doing the same work. I can't see him making those tackles. I can't see him being that much of a pest without getting himself booked pretty quickly.
You mean in the free? No, because, yeah, he in the 3-4-1-2 thing that we do, Brown sits behind Bugle. So what you're going to put him? I don't know. I don't see how Brown fits into Bugle not being there. Actually, I think it would be odd.
No, neither do I. I'd keep Maycock in the team, but you need some type of mobile forward unit, which surely is Foyo. If Piggott injured, you've got no option there. Either.
I don't know if Foyo's had enough minutes.
Well, we don't know anything about Foyo. I agree with Adam. Having begun this podcast and now with a certain particular comment, I'm now going to become what is known as a complete and utter hypocrite in that in the absence of Bugle, then who does play that kind of, I don't know what position they call it nowadays, it's some fancy thing. It's probably like centre right, half, full back, withdrawn, mid man, whatever.
Could be a false 10. It's either a false 10 or it's a false something or other.
False 10 Gale. If he's going to play false 10 Gale, right, which we haven't got a Gale anymore, so we have the false 10 Hudson or whatever, Hartson. Anyway, that role, I think the only person in our team that would be capable of doing that hassling harassment and offering a different type of threat may well be Brown in there, and you maintain Stevens up top. And then that's potentially what I might look to do. You know, it's not ideal, but I think that's how we have to operate. Or as we have talked previously on this pod, do we revert back to the formation that was pre our injury crisis when we played like this weird, unusual, ancient formation of 4-4-2? I don't know. I'm putting that out there as some weird kind of concept that we might have to consider.
Yeah, but even if you play 4-4-2, who are you playing up front for Stevens? Someone's got to do Stevens' work for him. If you don't give him chances, unfortunately, he's not really going to be able to contribute very much. And even with the couple of chances he had on Saturday, he's not exactly firing. And let's try and gloss over the open goal of the season that Omar managed to miss.
Oh, yeah, Matt, I've looked at it a few times. I'm like trying to work that out. That was crazy.
He tried to hit it into the ground, didn't he, or something weird? I don't know what happened. Something, yeah. Anyway, it's fine. He's allowed to make mistakes.
Remind me again. Mark, can you remind me again?
We've got two forwards that are so seriously out of form. And that is a problem. You know, we're having to rely on winning by, 1-0 to do it, and relying on our defence and that is a concern. And it's like, there is no magic wand that suddenly brings players that were firing on all cylinders, a month ago to do that. And that's a big thing. I'm wondering whether it's one of these things about actually psychological, and you actually need to kind of look at doing that to try and get these people back onto form.
One of the few things that made me feel slightly more at ease about the whole conundrum that is the playoffs / automatic picture is looking at the football web pages link, which I'm sure Adam can add to the chat tonight, which basically lists out the top scorers in every division. Top scorers in League Two, you can go down the first 15, 16, until you discover more than one team that's actually got more than one goal scorer in that list. So Notts County have McGoldrick at 14 and Jatter at 17. And Salford have Stockton at 9 and Adelaken at 8. Nobody else, including ourselves, obviously, has more than one goal scorer. And that's obviously Matt Stevens, but then you have to go down to about page 5 to discover our next highest scorer, who is James Tilley, with 7, I think, 6 or 7. So as a result of that, I'm not massively, massively concerned that all of a sudden loads of other people are going to find their scoring touch either. Because we have at least now, Alistair Smith has randomly come up with a couple of goals in the last three games, which is two more than he came up with in the sort of 35 before that, which is useful. Good and time Mark, to find his goal scoring touch.
Mark, there was other stats that you've got out there, which I thought was quite interesting. One about Notts County.
Oh yeah, this is mad. Again, this is just it was just another scout around to see, are we falling over ourselves about how poorly we're doing well, how poorly we're doing, and the fact that in the last six games we've lost 3, 1-2, drawn 1. And then a Notts County fan came up with Notts County have picked up 8 points in the last 24. So what's that? 2 wins, 2 draws, 2 defeats, I suppose, which is slightly better than us, in fact. Third of the points available, but somehow they're still 5th and 2 points off the automatics.
2 wins, 2 draws and 4 defeats, Mark.
There you go. Shows how much I'm paying attention to how many games that actually adds up to. And obviously against us, they looked awful. Immediately midweek after that, they looked pretty good again, but then they rolled over. Bradford lost at home to Tranmere. Tranmere can't buy a goal, let alone a win. I mean,
but did you see the penalty they got? They clearly bought something.
Utterly ridiculous, frankly. Yeah. If you look to the stats of that type of miscarriage of justice, as they say, doesn't happen against us.
Bradford had 3 shots. No, Tranmere had 3 shots. Bradford had 20 plus. If that's the sort of game, we've had that recently. I think, if we looked at the Cheltenham game, we actually had the more chances, the more opportunities. And, the atmosphere was rocking. It was a really, great atmosphere, great day, but like great night. But we got robbed, really, if I look at that game. And that's a game where I think we were just a little bit off form.
I got to pick you up on the atmosphere, actually. The atmosphere from the PSV fans was fantastic, but the South Stand have basically been carrying the whole stadium for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. They were fantastic against Notts County County. They were fantastic for about the first hour or so against Cheltenham. And then the team, you know, there's only so far people can actually maintain enthusiasm and energy if, unfortunately, the team's not showing it. Somebody posted again on social media the other day about how good it would be if we actually just get different pockets of the stadium singing. Again, against Barrow on Saturday, they're going to bring sod all fans, so we're going to be able to sing from both, all four sides. Sounds simple, but it does make a difference.
Well, I think the carrying the rest of the stadium is a little bit unfair. I think the South Stand encourage all of us to get excited. Our pocket, we're pretty... Well, OK, I'm getting pretty excited. But our pocket is pretty exciting, and we're, you know,
you do.
We're quite near.
You do get...
I see it further along in the West Stand, and that does not get that excited.
But I think... Listen... Our hardcore fans are always going to be behind the behind the goal. Our ultras, if you like, and they're going to be the ones that get things going and are singing and chanting all the way. And then, you know, every now and again it ripples through. And it was great against PSV against Cheltenham. And we had our chances. I mean, you know, Smith.
That was frustrating.
Just on the so much space, and you just thought the ball was going to roll into the net then, and we'd have been 2-1 up, and I'd have thought. Gone on to win that game, that was frustrating. But Carlisle was great. And I mean, you know, I'm used to getting on our WhatsApp group, you know, messages through, and they're usually things like "Gah" from Adam or.
So I'll tell you why
twats from Martin.
Contributing anything on the WhatsApp group.
Yeah.
So on Saturday afternoon, Friday, I drove to Wales to do a university viewing with my daughter. And then Saturday afternoon, we drove back. And this is Aberystwyth, West Wales. So basically, you've got to drive for like 2.5 hours in one random direction before you see anything like a motorway. So we're driving in rural... actually, just leaving Aberystwyth. And we already knew that we were 1-0 up. And then it was, you put the sat nav on, obviously, because you didn't know, no idea where you are, just trying to get yourself out of an unfamiliar town. So you're taking a left and taking a right, and then the sat nav says, you know, at the next junction, at which point the Radio 5 guy says, and now here's the score update, Carlisle United, turn left. KFC Wimbledon, turn right.
Brilliant.
And as if that's not bad enough, then the England score comes on, the rugby comes on. And we know we've won because I've managed to get my daughter to actually check the scores because they're only doing rugby commentary. So we know we've won. We don't know where we are on the table. So then at half time, the guy, again, Mark Chapman, was doing the hour and running through all the scores. And it's like, oh, and here's the updates of the table. So, Walsall are still top, and Bradford lost to Tranmere. What? Third place is turn left. Two moments. Sat nav had in the whole of a 6.5 hour journey. It had one fucking job to do.
Interrupt.
Classic.
That was not interrupt.
That's so good.
Sorry.
Oh, depth of Wales. I think,
so
well,
good.
You know, as usual, I have a feeling that Niall and I are quite similar when it comes, obviously, brothers. We've grown up together. We've got a nervousness about us. So I was listening to it. It gets to a point where you listen to it in a certain position, or, you know, on the TV or listen to Radio 5. And if a score is going your way, you don't move. It's like, I've got to stay listening to this is my lucky spot or something. It's absolutely ridiculous. Usually it gets you the second half before I do that. Can I go back to singing briefly? Because it's something quite funny I saw on socials from the hero that is General Lee talking about some of the songs that are coming out and suggesting that we're all chanting a bit too quickly. Are the songs being sung a bit too quickly?
I know what you mean, though, because if things build up.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, for example, if I started singing the Curry House song, would you know that? Certainly the ultra.
That's a slow song.
Buy up a curry house, sell cheap curry, chicken vindaloo, £2.50 or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
It's the Everywhere We Go song. Everywhere we go, people want to know who the hell we are. Shall we tell them?
Yes,
we are the we are Wimbledon, famous Wimbledon. Buy up a curry house, buy up a off license, buy up a sex shop, you know. Goes on from there.
Do you not remember the sex shop part? This is for your benefit. That's just Mark Lewis just like entertaining himself.
No.
Joe Lewis, as well. Mark's wife. I'm sorry about that. I didn't know about your husband being that way, but like if that's where he is, fine. I like the bit where it just goes curry house. Chicken Boona, £2.50.
I thought we went on the whole. We went through the whole menu, but
absolutely. But it's buy whatever you can buy.
But
generally, it's right. It's a slow song.
Yeah.
Because the whole point is that it keeps going. Because it's slow, people can work out what's going on. I mean, I've tried really hard to pick up some of the chants. I think there's some chants that have come in the season for people like Tilly and Stevens or whatever, and I just haven't got them. And I appreciate that. You know, I'm a little more older, longer in the tooth. They are too fast for me and my delicate ears.
And I'm interested, what do you think is our go-to chant? Because I was listening, and it's annoying because every time I'm listening to Radio 5, I'm listening to, they do this thing on a Saturday, the story of a chant or the story of a song.
Colin Murray or not? Yeah.
Colin Murray.
You're supposed to write in. And the only one we can write in about is the Champagne song.
I know.
There's no way they're going to do that. Obviously. No,
they can't. So I was just thinking, apart from the, what would be the go to? The We Are Wimbledon song is, you know, obviously it's the cup final tune or whatever it is. No one ever really sings it, do they? I mean, at the start when we're coming out, that is slow. But is there a go to chant? You know, what is the go to chant? I was thinking, you know, the chant would be being back at Plough Lane, you know. We're on our way home. Wombles had a dream to watch their football team playing back at Plough Lane.
That starts with a podcast that isn't the third rate podcast, clearly. Whereas I'd have thought our favourite one surely must be Same Old Wombles.
It's got to be a song.
Taking the
piss. We are Wombles. Yeah, same old Wombles. We are Wombles from the lane.
We should actually try and start that every week now, thinking about it. Levenek, what are we doing?
We are Wombles.
Well, unfortunately, we haven't had a chance to say Same Old Wombles taking the piss. It's usually...
No, it's not.
We are Wombles, Same Old Wombles. We are Wombles scraping for a 1-0 win. Doesn't scan
very well, does it?
No, exactly. But that would, so you would say our the go-to tune. I mean, I think it is the Champagne song. And you're right, we can't be sending that over to Colin Murray.
The other thing, of course, is you listen to the rugby commentary as I was driving through these windy lanes of Wales, and the only tune that the Welsh fans sing. I know this is a football podcast, but just to digress for a moment. The only tune that the English fans sing is Bread of Heaven. It's not Bread of Heaven. The Welsh fans sing Bread of Heaven. The only one the English fans sing, of course, is Swing Low, which is a slave chant, which they've been told not to sing.
Yeah.
Which the player, Atojo, who is now their captain, has told them not to sing. And the same upper class, middle, champagne quaffing whatevers still sing it, which is just ludicrous and rude.
Yeah. We're never going to stop singing that, I think.
The champagne song.
But we haven't heard it a lot this season, though, have we?
I don't know if it ever happened with you, Mark. On the champagne song, right, Adam, just on that, I don't know what happened with Mark when he was on the board, but certainly was discussed at length on the board about what we should do about the champagne song. You know, that has definitely been in the conversation. You know, and I think in the fantastic way that the Don's Trust board does act is that I think we completely fudged it and then waffled a long time and then people realised it was getting on until about midnight and we were kind of quite bored by that point. But, you know, that was a big debate because it is like, you know, personally I like it. Yes, I'm it. Personally, I like it. Should I like it? I know I shouldn't. Right. That's the reality with that song. But it is iconic. You know, and that is a song that, you know, we like singing. I mean, the other one is obviously two times out of non-league, we're never going to score as all of us think it is.
I know, stop, but the way they say
stop, but it doesn't, that doesn't seem to scan.
The way they say stop, it sounds like score.
Like stop. It always sounds like score. Weird. Two times
that. Stop in this Glaswegian accent from South London Voices.
It just sounds like, you know, really, two times out of non-league and yet you didn't actually ever get a goal. I just think that's quite an achievement, really. Yeah. You know, that's kind of like advanced lobbying 101.
But, of course, we only ever sing it when we score goals, so it's completely contradictory anyway. Yeah.
I completely don't know all the lyrics of that, so I test any...
What, you don't know, the lyrics of that? Two times out of non-league, we're never going to stop. The franchise on the FA,
we beat the FA lot.
That's a two-day Bassett, we belong.
We are
supporters, and we come from
Wimbledon.
Ole, ole, ole,
ole,
ole, ole, ole. But the problem is, the ole, 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 everyone has a version of that now, so that's not original either.
I guess the other one for would be Take My Hand.
Song, right?
Would it be not Take My Hand? Would it be Take
My Hand? Every lot of fans, a lot of clubs sing that. I do love it, but a lot of clubs sing that. Going back to the song previously, right? Two times out of non-league, we're never going to stop. From Batsford to Dave Bassett, right?
Yeah.
That's one time. That's one time out of non-league. What about the second time? Where's the reference to the second time out of non-league? Surely it should be like...
From Batsford to Terry Brown.
That's why I've never learnt the middle section and don't bother with that bit. I just do the beginning and the end.
I've never heard you know, sing.
Bassett did not take us out of non-league.
I don't sing, Mark. I shout.
Yeah, you do. That you do. And now, before you go off onto this again, I'm just going to pick up one thing that you have said, which will bring me on to the link, is that this was discussed in the Don's Trust board. Talking of the Don's Trust board. I see something else that's come out. And it was obviously discussed at the Meet the PLC, was the fact that we're yet again in a financial crisis. But I want to know, how much of a financial crisis are we in? I mean, we're losing £1 million a year, and that's kind of before player sales. But I didn't know whether that included TV revenue or like anything else. I mean, how bad are things?
No, but I was going to say, the first thing to say is you can't call it a crisis if we've been losing £1 million since 2018. That's an ongoing situation that we need to address. So I wouldn't say it's a crisis.
Yeah, but the reality is we're a fan-owned club.
Yeah.
As a fan-owned club, we don't have, and we don't want to have, any rich sugar daddy who will be in a position to fund the losses that the club makes. Every business, as an ongoing concern, tries to make a profit, and obviously if they don't make a profit, they have to work out how to deal with that, or they have to economise appropriately. Our version of economising has obviously been selling players. We've been selling players since... Most of us remember when we were first watching Wimbledon in the early 80s and so on. So that isn't anything particularly new. We're obviously being much more upfront and honest now with the supporters than, you know, the likes of Ron Nodes and Sam Haman back in the day were, about exactly how much money we were losing.
And certainly more reliable than the Coppel calculator.
Oh, absolutely.
Where, you know, like every 2 minutes, it could the amount we lost could change.
Precisely. So the actual reality is we could choose to reduce our outgoings, and then there's only two ways of reducing your outgoings. You are in, if you're an ongoing business concern, not a football club, then you reduce the number of members of staff you have. Now, obviously, a football club needs certain numbers of players to physically be able to play its games, and it needs certain level of backroom staff and management and so on. And also commercially off the field, you need a number of other people to be able to run things. So I think genuinely, and I saw him coming into the Notts County game very, very sheepishly, not saying anything to anyone and just basically trying to avoid everybody's eyesight once again. We are still living with the legacy of what's going on and what Joe Palmer signed us up to in terms of contracts. Some of those contracts are now finally coming to an end. Broncos one obviously has been rejigged by the Broncos themselves. Then Elior are either about to be replaced, or at least then there has been a competitive tender, because that's the genuine thing that I believe has been the case, that actually there were competitive tenders done for certain things at the club, and therefore the financial benefits the club could have got from catering, for example, they just didn't get because these things weren't done particularly well for whatever reason. But I'm putting all that one at Joe Palmer's door, and no one's actually proved me wrong in that regard so far. Therefore, whoever does the catering next season, whoever does the pubs next season, if there's an opportunity for one company to do the catering and the pub together, for example, as long as they can keep just such a good quality selection of IPAs for Adam and other IPA drinkers, then that surely is going to be financially better off, a better situation for the club. Is it going to make up a £1 million shortfall? I doubt it. Not in the short.
I mean, and I know that there's an audit of what's going on in the club. Nye.
Right. Lots of points here that I want to make.
Okay.
Firstly,
have you read with the beeping thing, Adam?
Oh. A £1 million loss in League Two a year is like probably below the average. Right. So that is not unusual. Having a club that depends largely on player sales, particularly in the lower ends of the pyramid, also not unusual. On looking at the problem that we have, and in the background, I've been watching the House of Lords are debating the Football Governance Bill as we speak, and a couple of key clauses have happened while we've been on there. And one of those is about the backstop powers and the power to look at the financial distribution. The Tories put in a clause and that's been defeated, which is good. That means that we have the ability to look at trying to address those gaps that exist between the divisions, which is one key thing, which should mean more money for AFC Wimbledon. Equally, it will also amplify the need for clubs to be financially sustainable. So actually making sure that you don't spend more than you earn. Now, we do talk about we're making £1 million loss, but relative to all the other clubs around us, and certainly the clubs in the divisions above us, they would have to cut their cloth significantly more than we would. So what you're looking at is a potential, irrespective of where there's more money coming down the pyramid, that loads of clubs around us will have to readdress the amount of money they spend, which relatively will benefit AFC Wimbledon. So we will be more competitive because other clubs will have had to cut more than we do.
Can I ask this question?
That's my first point.
Can I make this one? Before you. How many points? I don't know how many points you're going to have. I don't know how many there are. There could be loads of them. Okay, 2 points is good. But just to pick up on that. But the fact is, although other clubs around us make a loss, they are able to cover that loss because their owners put money in, which covers the loss. So surely they would get around that.
Another part. That's another part of what's been looked to the regulator, which is that you have to look at your sustainability. And that means that addressing the big issue that if an owner was to walk away, there has to be sufficient funds set aside for that club to be able to pay its liabilities, which in that case means players' wages. So if a club has a person who's throwing money in the club, they have to make sure that that is an ongoing situation, which in a way is kind of fair. If they're going to be, you want people to throw money in, they can do so, but that requires that long-term sustainability, which a lot of owners aren't willing to do. So you start up losing loads of those kind of reckless owners that do exist out there. What all this means, even if that is a limited impact, that impact is going to be beneficial relatively to us.
Will that mean clubs going bust?
It will mean clubs are going to have to cut their cloth. They'll know within a period of time what the situation looks like, and they will have that kind of temporary evaluation to look at what they need to do. And that's where it will look at doing that. Does it mean clubs will go bust? I actually don't think so. I think it will mean that we'll move towards a more financially sustainable ecosystem within football. And that's where we need to move towards, because at the moment you're putting too much at risk for when an owner walks away. That's what causes clubs to go bust.
And I was going to say, from what Niall was saying, what I would have liked to have seen from the statements that have been put out from the club is a stronger stance on the fact that this is an unsustainable model. it's not the fact that we need to generate £1 million extra a year revenue. It's the fact that we might have to do that because we are sitting in an unsustainable model. And I would have liked the club to have been much stronger on that and have said, this is where we're at. This is not acceptable. We need to make this kind of money. But also, this isn't acceptable because clubs shouldn't be run this way. And I don't see why they wouldn't do that, actually. I think they should be stronger in that, because you can't just say to the fans, oh, well, we've got to figure out a way to make a million more a year. Well, actually, that's not correct, because everything in football is unsustainable and inappropriate in terms of the way that the money is run. And we should stronger.
That is true. But our model is not dissimilar to a whole load of models at our level, which is selling players.
Yeah, and no, I'm not. I'm not disagreeing with that. But
that's the way we are doing. I do think that when you do the analysis on where AFC Wimbledon are in terms of our financial management, we are right at the top of being amongst the most financially responsible clubs, irrespective of the fact we're losing a million a year. You know, that tells you a lot about the rest of the football system as well, mind. But it does say that actually we have people that really know their onions and are doing things right.
Again, now the thing with that is we haven't lost a million a year. Our challenge has been that we've had to ensure that we sell enough players to make up that difference, which we are doing. And the club is clearly being cautious or careful about the fact that maybe we won't sell some players, and which I get. I totally get that model, because we don't want to rely on player sales. I'm sure we will continue to make good player sales and we'll be okay. But that's also why I think we should sort of say we don't know what our player sales are going to be, but we've got a track record of making great player sales. However, football shouldn't be run this way. And so, you know,
my second point is a totally different way of looking at it. And that over this last week, I've had a conversation with Wrexham for about an hour and a half on how they operate and how they do their systems. Now, the wide assumption is that Ryan Reynolds is putting in millions a year, and he is putting a bit, but his investment has been in the infrastructure of the club. And one of the biggest things that they've done, which is really notable, is they've basically hired the marketing team that were running Inter Milan and a couple of other like big European clubs to do basically try and make sure that they are getting the best sponsorship deal. They're selling their story and they're marketing themselves massively. So they are paying people, their backroom staff, at the highest level. And that is what's generating them the most amount of money, because it's the ridiculous sponsorship deals that Wrexham are getting. And admittedly, you know, there is a bit of stardust twinkle going on there, but
more than a bit.
That is how you actually look at creating more wealth. And that is what we haven't done, which is, and I've stressed this so many times, selling our story. You know, if we went out and actively sold our story and were willing to invest in selling our story, the return on investment of that would be very significant. And that's what Wrexham were telling me time and time again, is that what they were doing was putting that upfront investment to make sure that they were financially sustainable for the longer haul. And that is connected to a lot of long-term deals that they're doing. There's a whole load of things I don't like what Wrexham are doing about, and a whole load of things. I'm not like going to say I love the Wrexham model. I don't necessarily love the Wrexham model. But that did say to me, if you hire people with great marketing skills in the football industry that are willing to sell a story that, like we've got, which is really special, then we have the potential to grow. But it takes a bit of balls to say, right, actually, what we're going to be investing in to Nick Robertson or whatever, throw in that money and do it on marketing and get the club marketed properly, because that will deliver so much more for us longer term.
I suspect, though, without knowing any financial situations off the field at Wrexham, if the off the field stuff is anything like the on the field stuff, where they're recruiting the likes of Stephen Fletcher and James McLean and the lad from Reading they bought in the January transfer window, let alone obviously offering Ollie Palmer a 3-year deal at the age of 31 as they did, they're doing an upper scale version on the pitch of what we did when we were back in the CCL, paying people, getting in players who are still capable of playing one or two levels above. And it sounds like they're probably getting the same thing off the field as well. So you're going to be paying marketing people, whatever the going rate is for a marketing person, but considerably more than that. And unfortunately, that's just not the ballpark we're playing in right now. So, yeah, you're quite right, Niall. There are different things we can do in terms of how we do stuff. But equally, it's the speculate to accumulate. Can we afford to speculate in that particular regard? No, we can't right now.
That's the bit that if you were looking at it and going, right, if you were going to be going for the risk model, then the risk model, long-term sustainability, would be invest in our backroom staff, because that's what develops a club longer haul. I remember, hearing Arsene Wenger talk about it and said, right, if you gave me a load of extra money, what would I invest it in? I invest in the backroom staff because those are the ones that deliver you long-term. And when he meant backroom staff, he didn't mean your coaches. He meant your marketing. Well, get all of that, get that right first. And then you can see progression. And I go back to, I still think that volunteer pool, you know, there probably are people, because of who we are, that might be able to willing to put that effort in on that whole backroom element to really push us onto another level. That's where I think if we want to address the £1 million, that's where we need to look at. It's that talent to bring that £1 million in that's out there. And that's what we've not done.
Right, so let me ask you a question on that, Manoir, actually, because we have both agreed that we've kind of missed that selling that USP for quite a while. Yeah. And now we're, you know, looking hopefully for some fantastic potential to go into League One. Have we actually missed the boat on marketing us at a point where we could afford the kind of level of marketing that we'd need to have that snowball effect? And now we're at this kind of bigger level that we can't, whether it be volunteers or others, we can't afford to actually really sell our USP anymore.
I think, you know, no, we haven't missed the boat. We certainly missed the best opportunity to do it.
Yeah.
You know, which would have been years ago. It's still out there. Otherwise, you wouldn't have people like John Green doing what John Green does. But, you know, what we need to do is really step it up and say, right, look, well, we need to do this.
What we're going to do, as the Same Old Bombers podcast at some point, is we'll put together a list of our recommendations. Because there's a few things. Over the course of this season, we've talked to a few people. I mean, it was great to talk to Kerry last week. And some of the stuff that she was coming out with was, was worrying, and also hearing from the fans' experience and hearing what she was like on the DTP, that was worrying. So I think that's something we will look to put together our sort of 10 learnings, 10 things that we can take to the DTB. And we've talked about the volunteer manager many, many times, and we're all agreed that we've talked about not selling our story as a USP many, many times. And again, that's something we need to bring to the board that needs to be done. I mean, again, it's interesting that when Mick Buckley talks about what he's going to do with the club, he's doing an audit of spend, and that worries me because it looks like it's going to be cost cutting. And I think Keynesian economics approach, which is, you know, I think that there needs to be a sense of investment. We need to take some sort of risks. I think we're probably all of that, and we're all a little bit woke as well. And just going on the woke angle, I see that Newcastle won the League Cup yesterday, which I'm sure would have pleased Niall no end. And I just feel for the Newcastle United against sports washing, because they're not going to the games, and they are, you know, they're amazing fans who, you know, like love their club, but don't want to get involved in this. So I think that's fantastic, and all power to them. Also, my other thing is, and I think Mark could come in on this one, is, you know, had we'd played Newcastle at home in the early round of the League Cup, would they even be there yesterday?
Who knows? I certainly would have thought that we would have been more attacking, and rather less passive than we were, as it turned out, in the away game, even though the away game was wonderful and we had amazing support. I must admit, it does sit a little uneasily for me. I've got, you know, work colleagues and personal friends of Newcastle fans who obviously have been starved of any success. So for the fans, you're happy for the way it's come about with the investment and the nature of the activities in Saudi. I can't look beyond that, I'm afraid, sadly, sadly for them, so to speak, which isn't, isn't particularly pleasant. But yeah, as it stood, they weren't playing amazing early part of the season. They didn't play amazing against us, actually, even in that game. And it was a relatively soft penalty, which I still don't think to this day was actually a penalty. And they only came through 1-0. And they were far less convincing against us than they actually were in the final there against the team that are
Liverpool.
almost certainly going to win the league title this season in Liverpool.
It's. I mean, it was. It's. It is interesting that corner, that sort of like, feeling for the fans. I think, yet again, what is really disappointing is that, everyone gets really caught up in the excitement. No one is questioning in the mass, in the media, anything behind it. But
Some people
it's
are
tricky.
not, but not enough.
There are some people.
It's being relatively overlooked.
There are some people because
Oliver
if
Holt,
you know
Oliver
they're
Holt on social media was very quickly on there to pick it up and start having a few slanging matches with some well-known journalists, actually, which is I found interesting.
so I think there is an element out there, and I think there's a sense a little bit from some Newcastle quarters that it's a bit of a dirty victory. Yeah, obviously deliriously happy to win it, but like there's a little guilt underneath it, that I've sensed from a few Newcastle fans that I know. They're going to love it. They're going to say all that. But it's a kind of like, yeah, but like actually, we're advocating killing journalists and treating women shit, which is basically when your chairman happens to sit on in the government of Saudi Arabia. So it's not like there is a particular disconnect between the two. That is pretty much a guy advocating for those procedures, so those kind of policies. So I do think it's weird. It's weird. I love Newcastle as the city and the passion they have for football, and I get it, and I get the idea of the city celebrating it. Just like Mark says, there's a whole kind of like dirty stuff going on behind the scenes, and it just feels a bit Irish. I wanted Liverpool to win for that reason. They played shit, but
It was interesting. I mean, like the dirty tactics of doing our water tanks in, so we didn't beat them. I think that was a whole other level. And one sort of final thing I'd like to mention is, obviously our best wishes are with Colton Fairweather, who has been diagnosed with prostate cancer. And all of our fans are with him. And I'm just trying to think if you've got a sort of like a favourite Colton Fairweather moment. I mean, I think he scored. Didn't he score against in our
Let's
first
go.
game against Liverpool? Didn't he score in our first game against Liverpool at Plough Lane? I think we lost.
Lost
Did we
that
lose?
3-1.
We lost that 3-1, and he scored a tap-in header.
Am I the only one of the group that's actually ever played for Carlton Fairweather FC?
Yeah, I've not played for Carlton Fairweather FC.
So Carlton Fairweather FC was a team started by Mickey Lonergan, who we've mentioned before. We mentioned his late son Jack's foundation, the Jack London Foundation, and it was basically a bunch of women fans, and I'm going back 30 years at least, probably 25, 30 years. We played under Dundonald Rec, which is literally over the road from where I grew up, and I think Mike Tally-Dawes might have played in there. Mark Jones certainly played in there. Adrian Perrone certainly played in there. Mickey Lonergan was the goalkeeper, and it was a proper Sunday League team. We had a guy up front whose name escapes me as to what his real name is. We called him Müller after Gerd Müller, the German striker, because once in one game he was quite lethal. The rest of the time he was like the rest of us, slightly overweight and not really that good. John Giddins played in there as well. John Giddins is a big, long standing Wimbledon fan. He was like the John Leslie, to Müller's Alan Cork in terms of like little and large up front. And I'd like come on as like a 10-minute super sub and not really be very super, just be a sub really. But that was Carlton Fairweather FC, and there we were a Sunday League team, as I say, way back probably late 90s, which is good fun while it lasted.
I mean, I loved Colton Fairweather. I thought he was brilliant, wonderful, tricky winger,
And of
fantastic.
course, biggest tragedy there. I mean, what he's going through now is clearly absolutely awful. But from a football tragedy point of view, he broke his leg and therefore was never able to be part of the 88 Cup final team.
No.
Obviously, Laurie Cunningham came in, but Carlton Fairweather should have been in that team, would have been in that team, gracing Wembley.
Yeah.
So Carlton Fairweather, didn't he break his leg against West Brom in the, was it at the third round, FA, the third round game? I can't remember exactly, but I think that was right.
That's good news. I couldn't tell you that much.
Yeah.
It was the 4-1 win in the first game of that cup run.
Yeah, he was great. I mean, and to score against Liverpool, I think did he score another one against? Did he score another one against Liverpool? Was there a weird one where we were losing 1-0 and we were battered, and I think he's put a leg out and converted in. Niles got one of his many reference books, but yeah, I think our best wishes are with Colton, and he was a brilliant, exciting player, and I know he's been looking after the Sunderland lady, so he would have been very upset about the Newcastle result yesterday. But anyhow, so there we are, dear listener. We've meandered through the last couple of games. It was bad. It was good. We've gone to our favorite chance of the season.
Scott's playing good again.
The
mad thing about having 9 games left is results like Bradford losing at home, even with a dodgy penalty to Tranmere, and Walsall just trying as hard as possible to self-combust. Something else came out about Walsall today. They've had 5 or 6 players called up for internationals this weekend.
Yes.
A couple of them are like fringe players. One of them's their first choice goalkeeper. One of them is their main right back or left back. Right back, I think. And the left back is also suspended for a couple of games because we've got to 10 bookings. And somehow we managed to avoid anyone getting to 10 bookings, which is a miracle, really. So they've got 5 or 6 players unavailable for this weekend's game, which I think is Gillingham away off the top of my head.
Yep, it's definitely Gillingham.
They've decided not to ask for the game to be postponed. Which,
what?
Yeah, exactly. They had the choice because it's 3 players, right? And they've chosen not to.
What, so they're not going to play with the first team goalie?
That's right. Or the first team left back or right back. So basically, 3 out of the first choice, like back 4 or 5 or whatever, are not available. And they are carrying on anyway.
Maybe.
Why didn't they postpone it? That's insane.
Well, maybe they feel, because they've been on this bad run, maybe they feel like this is an opportunity to give other players.
Well, the interesting thing is, Doncaster, I don't know whether it's Doncaster themselves or whoever Doncaster are playing this weekend, but Doncaster's game has been postponed, and I can only imagine it's because of international call-ups.
Yeah,
they're playing Salford.
Salford City. I don't know whether Salford City have 3 players in international whatevers, but Doncaster-Salford means that Doncaster are going to be a game behind, and as far as I can see, they're going to have to play that midweek in April, which in itself is obviously putting them a game behind everyone else. And let's face it, we'd rather have points in the bag at this point in time in the season, wouldn't we? Not games in hand?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, well, I mean, it's going to be interesting because Port Vale have got a game in hand on us, haven't they? And that would take them into third. But anyhow, chaps, it's been a pleasure as always. Thank you very much. And we move on to Barrow. Are we all going to be there on Saturday on Barrow?
Absolutely right. No distractions from Six Nations games anymore.
Excellent. Well, I will look forward to seeing you all at Plough Lane on Saturday.
Can I just say, before you sign off,
a
quick bit of, I had some listener feedback this week.
Oh, listener feedback.
3 bits of listener feedback, actually.
3 bits of listener feedback. Yes. This is amazing.
A certain American listener who we mentioned once or twice, and we might have had a guest on recently, claimed that we were the best podcast by far. So thank you very much, Tricia. We'll pay you later.
Yeah, where do we send the check?
And then I had a couple of other ones from, I'm not going to name who they are, but a couple of different members of the Dontos board were kind enough to one message me directly and the other one put a message on social media. One was pointing out, obviously, the thanking us and maybe thanking Kerry, actually, for the sensible point she made last week about the trials and tribulations of anyone considering to be on the DTB. Which was nice to hear. So thank you for that. And the other one was about me pointing out that basically the aspiring Wimbledon fan is white and middle class and affluent and whatever else. And this was from someone who apparently was someone who grew up on a council estate. and still became to a Wimbledon fan. So we'll embrace everybody from all over the place. But thank you for that feedback anyway, wherever it comes from. We appreciate people listening to us. And the fact it's more than two is always really positive to hear.
We welcome anyone.
I've got one other thing to mention, and this was down to the guy that came up to me as I was selling a program to him on, I know his face, I couldn't tell you his name. Regular program buyer, he'll know who he is because his card never works and he has to put it in. It doesn't tap. And he said, yeah, he definitely remembered Hong Kong Fury, number one super guy, which was fabulous because I then saw on TV, on social media today, that on this day in 1975, the first ever episode of Hong Kong Fury aired in the UK. So happy birthday to Hong Kong Fury, 50 years old today. Our man and janitor are us.
If ever there was going to be a brilliant place to sign off, it would be with Hong Kong Fury. Thank you, Niall. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Adam. I'm Matt Cooper. We're the same old Wombles. We're back.